I'm going to be talking pretty much from my own personal experience of showing work in museums and not in museums. I'm not really giving much in the way of examples of my own work, but for those who don't know my work and are interested, I'm happy to supply information if you get in touch with me, videos, etc. I meet a lot of scared people in art museums, angry and scared because they're afraid of feeling stupid, afraid of their own subjective experience of the artwork, afraid that their own subjective experiences of the artworks are wrong or invalid. I started making explicitly interactive installations in 1981. The first of these involved no electronic technology at all. Their attempts to remind the viewers that artworks are brought to life by their perceptions, their experience, their memories, their fears, their desires. I wanted to amplify their awareness of their own responsibility and their stake in the process, to give them explicit permission to have their own experience of the work. Because if they can't have that, then there's really no point for them, for the artists, for the curators. A work of art is situated within the context of an architecture, lighting, an acoustic environment, a social context, a historical context, didactic panels, and institution. But the ultimate context within which the work resonates or dies is the mind, heart, consciousness, soul, whatever, of the viewer. An exhibiting institution has a responsibility to do everything in its power to deliver the viewer to the work in as open, curious, and receptive a state as possible. If the viewer is hostile, disenfranchised, closed, threatened, or disengaged, then the works haven't got a chance. In 1995, during the opening of the Kwangju Biennale in Korea, I witnessed an extraordinary sight. The pavilions were crawling with people, from rural farmers in traditional clothing to outworld jet setters. One Korean visitor who spoke some English was addressing anyone who would pay attention, pleading with physical gestures of desperation, clutching at people's lapels. Please help me understand this work. I want to understand. People in museums rarely have the courage to make this sort of plea. The atmosphere was electric. And I think it's really important for me to state that I'm not just talking about the fear felt by the average gallery visitor, the unwashed masses, etc. Curators and museum directors can be just as afraid of not understanding, especially when encountering works that sit outside of their area of expertise or experience. I have a complicated history with museums. As an artist who uses computers in his work, I have found myself working for the most part on the margins of the art world. As a result, I've had to explore a wide range of alternatives to the museum context for my work. Like many other frustrated artists of various media, not just new media, I've put my work in storefronts, in public spaces, science museums, rehabilitation clinics, private homes, trade shows, lobbies, parks, etc. These sorts of spaces have a great advantage over museums. The viewer is relaxed, casual, in a familiar element. Their guard is not up. They take things at face value. If an artwork draws them in deeper, then great. If not, it slips out of sight and mind. But a lot of works will not survive in this kind of context. Having questioned its value and worked outside its frame, I still find myself drawn back to the museum context, both as a visitor and as an exhibiting artist. I like museums. But perhaps, more truthfully, I should say that there's a special state of reflective awareness which I greatly value and which I associate with a few transcendent museum experiences. I like museums, perhaps. The ideal museum experience is the result of a perfect balance of context and content, such that the museum successfully induces a state of mind maximally conducive to the open and unhindered reception of the artworks it contains. I want this kind of context for some of my works. Some would disappear in more casual contexts. But by this I mean I would like my audience to come to my works in a museum state of mind, not necessarily that the work should reside in any particular kind of building or institution. I sometimes want a space where I can carefully balance the context and provide a calm and reflective frame to increase the likelihood that the work will be offering its best face to any viewer who graces it with their full attention and curiosity. This is a very personal perspective. What I imagine museums could be and should be may not resemble your idea of a museum. I'm talking from the very selfish position of an art maker and an art viewer. More specifically, I'm talking as someone who falls into the catch-all category, new media artist. Now, grouping artists who use digital technology into a single category is about as useful as putting ceramicists, photographers, filmmakers, and metal sculptures together in the category chemical artist. It is the most defining characteristic of digital media that it has very little in the way of a defining characteristic. Or perhaps I should say that its defining characteristic is its flexibility, its chameleon-like ability to mimic just about anything else. This means that digital media makes it easier for an artist to range across a wide variety of media and art making strategies. And in particular, it allows a single artist to range across a wide range of media and art making strategies, or each artist. Digital technologies are ideal tools for artists who already feel an urge towards multidisciplinary disciplinarity and concept-driven work. The increasing use of digital media by all kinds of artists mean that there will be more and more artists making new kinds of work, making in turn new kinds of demands upon exhibition spaces. I find myself wondering why, after a century of mold breaking by artists, are new contemporary art museums still designed predominantly for painting and sculpture? Other kinds of museums seem to have adapted more quickly. Throwing new kinds of work into unsuitable physical contexts and exhibition paradigms simply bewilders the often already defensive gallery goer and does not do the work justice. Conventional rules and models for museum and exhibition design need to change or be augmented so that museums can provide a supportive context for this increasing variety of work. Some of the problems are purely practical. One of the biggest challenges in presenting unconventional work in the museum context is that museum buildings are almost without exception acoustic nightmares. More and more work, acoustic nightmares. Now, actually, when you're walking through the museum, it's not a nightmare. There's something lovely about the resonant space. But from the point of view of someone presenting artwork with sound, it is an acoustic nightmare. More and more works include a sound component. Most gallery and museum spaces have no way to provide an appropriate acoustic frame for a work including sound. A sound work must be allowed to be loud. Conversely, it might present barely audible sounds that require a surround of silence. Presenting sound works in audible range of each other is the oral equivalent of placing paintings on the wall so that they physically overlap. At the Venice Biennale in 1986, I presented a work involving nothing but sound. Seven works, including mine, which included sound, were grouped together in a space with open ceilings and no sound insulation. The result was acoustic chaos. It was left to the artists to negotiate a compromise, which in this case substantially diminished or completely destroyed the work. In my experience, it does not matter how much you emphasize the importance of sound isolation to curators. This may largely be due to the fact that traditional arts representation spaces have absolutely no facilities for addressing the problem. So curators move forward willfully ignoring the problem because the alternative is to not show the work at all. I'm not always sure which is the worst alternative. The solution that is clear, though perhaps not convenient, multiple works, including sound components, should never share a room unless headphones are used, which is not often possible or appropriate. Now, I'm being hardline on that, but I think it's worth starting from the hardline position and moving backwards. The problem is bad enough. I did a show recently in the inaugural exhibition of a new museum in the States. And the inaugural show, every work in the show involved sound. The building had just been built. It was a similar acoustic nightmare. Concrete walls, concrete floor. You could not discern the sound of one piece from another. And this is in a context where it's the first show of the new museum, which had been designed with the help of the curator who had designed the show. So it didn't really make sense to me. Despite the sound level problems, the situation in Venice had an interesting and unexpected upside for the sound works, however. Visitors to the Biennale or any similarly large exhibition or museum achieve a state of visual overwhelm. People arrived at my sound installation effectively blind, visually shut down, but with ears wide open and ready to listen. It would seem easy to predict that two sound works within audible range would interfere, but interference can happen in much subtler ways as well. To the degree that a work draws you into its particular worldview and mode of experience, it changes the way that you experience subsequent works in the same context. I presented a video installation called Silicon Remembers Carbon at the power plant in 1995. The work included a video projection from above onto a bed of sand. In the same exhibition, American artist Jim Campbell had an installation which included a video projection onto a horizontal surface of salt. In my piece, I wanted visitors to have to decide for themselves whether to touch and walk on the sand. Jim specifically wanted the surface of salt in his projection to be undisturbed, and so a sign placed outside his installation asking people not to touch the artwork. As the layout of the power plant allows people to travel through the exhibition in either direction, some encountered Jim's before mine and others encountered mine first. The result was a clash of cultures. Visitors who encountered Jim's installation first carried this don't touch prohibition into my installation, where they scolded other visitors who were about to touch the sand. Visitors going the opposite direction would struggle through their art-touching inhibitions in my work and then mess with Jim's salt. In addition, our two works involved a degree of interaction. Placed between our works was a lovely and subtle work by Christine Davis, with no explicit interaction at all. But visitors could be seen waving their hands above her laser-inscribed contact lenses, trying to get a response. Now, I hasten to add that this was actually one of the better curated exhibits I've been in that involved new media artwork, and that it's not. I'm not raising it here particularly as a criticism of the show, but actually as an articulation of the kinds of problems that we run into when we put these kinds of work in the same space together. I currently have a piece at the National Gallery as part of the Governor General's show, and it poses a particularly interesting problem, perhaps, for and possibilities, shall we say, in the museum context. It's a piece called The Giver of Names, and in The Giver of Names, I have a pile of objects on the floor which are essentially pretty worthless. And they're just sort of scattered about, available to be picked up by people coming into the gallery. They can pick these up and place them on a pedestal that is at the far end of the space. The top of the pedestal is observed by a camera and computer system that analyzes the objects and gives them names, ascribes some sort of meaning, talks about them, etc. Now, in the context of a museum where objects are generally precious, presenting objects that are not precious, where they're not only precious but not allowed to be touched, presenting a work where objects must be touched for it to operate presents logistical problems, clearly, especially in the context of the museum guard who's always standing there representing the authority of the museum and things like that. So it was interesting to work through strategies to get around this problem, which included befriending the guards and making sure that they felt friendly towards the work and would help people to get over that problem, and trying to deal with things with signage, the results of which I haven't been able or success of which I haven't been able to verify because I haven't been there since the signs went up. Museums are housing works that involve an increasingly wide variety of modes of reception on the part of the visitor. The exhibition context needs to assist the visitor in negotiating or navigating these transitions, or else the visitor is left trying to figure out, in an already biased context, what exactly they're supposed to be paying attention to in this particular work. Ideally, a work speaks for itself, and I really appreciated what Spring said in her work, leaving it without comment. But in the context of other works, sometimes that's not possible if there's not sufficient space, contextual space around it. Ideally, a work speaks for itself, guiding the viewer to the proper state of attention. But this is unrealistic in any situation where the work is not allowed to sit in a neutral frame, sufficiently separate from other works around it, both in physical and psychological senses. Context includes not only the physical frame, sound and lighting, but also time. Time-based works complicate the flow of a museum visit. In an increasing number of exhibitions, the visitor does not have a hope of being able to consume all the works in a reasonable amount of time. Add to this the challenge of interactive works that play out across time but have no fixed duration. How long is long enough? I'm increasingly convinced that some artworks should have suggested viewing times to give the visitor some sort of rough guideline. I keep seeing, there's also, of course, that great precedent with Duchamp's work. I keep seeing a certain look on people's faces. Have I got it yet? Will it become clear if I stay here a little longer? Or is this an artistic one-liner? Again, I stress that this can be just as true of experienced curators as of first-time visitors. I guess that maybe what I'm trying to say is that works seem to be requiring more and more space around them, whatever I mean space in a lot of different ways, a space tailored to help visitors negotiate the radical shifts in what is being asked of them as viewers. And it's important to point out that I'm not just, I'm just going to repeat myself here, so I'm going to skip over it. yeah, I'll say it anyway. Important to point out that I'm not just talking of the casual gallery visitor with limited knowledge of the current trends in art. Expert gallery visitors, in fact, carry a context of informed expectations with them as they travel through the exhibition. These informed expectations can be just as much of a barrier for someone confronting unconventional work as can lack of knowledge or experience. And we need to be willing, and this is something that I've really struggled with. Again, I've tried as much as possible to not have to have any text around my work that's overly descriptive, but I'm starting to understand that maybe I have to change my mind about this. We need to be willing to be as explicit as necessary to help people negotiate these transitions. This includes a willingness to break museum rules about presentation, about a willingness to be less elegant sometimes in order to frame a work more effectively. Now, I've been talking mostly about museum responsibilities and curatorial responsibilities. I do think there's a particular problem also in dealing with new media work, that because we've been working outside of the frame of museums, that there actually needs to be a collaboration, a very strong collaboration between, for example, new media artists and people, architects, museum designers, curators, et cetera, within the museum context to come to solutions that will frame these works properly. Thanks.
Thank you very much, David. Apart from instituting a seminar for curators,